Let's dig in and see what leadership lessons we learn in today's episode. At the end of the show, we'll score some of the main characters on John Wooden's Pyramid of Success. But let's start with a quick recap.
Why are you winding him up?
He's the one, Coach. We're going to make an impact here. First domino needs to fall right inside that man's heart.
Season 1, Episode 3 starts with Rebecca furious for not finding any report of Ted and Keeley in the newspaper. Although she's happy to taste biscuits with the boss, she is in no mood for Ted's jokes. Ted whiteboards the team's current terrible offense and erases it in a symbolic gesture. Nate has an idea to use Jamie as a decoy. Ted decides they will try it on. Keeley shows Ted the picture that was going to run in the paper, and while she's cute as a button, she knows this could be a catastrophe. So Ted takes her to see Rebecca, who says she will talk to the owner of the Sun. Rebecca's original plan is ruined, but she quickly comes up with another one. Trent Krim from The Independent is going to join Ted for the day to write an article. At practice, everyone but Jamie seems to like Nate's play, and Roy is fed up with Jamie encouraging the bullying of Nate. Ted and Beard gift everyone with a book. And Ted has Roy wound up. Turns out Keeley is pretty good at impressions. Keeley brings Rebecca a present, and Roy and Ted bring Trent Krim to Roy's niece's school. Trent explains the plot of A Wrinkle in Time, then Ted and Trent have a hot dinner at Ollie's restaurant. Roy reads Phoebe a bedtime story, then heads to the club to put an end to the bullying. Trent writes his article and surprises everyone with his conclusion. And that is the lasso way.
Oh my goodness, okay. Huge fan of Trent Krim. He's one of my favorite characters, I think. Brings so much to the party. But when I watch that trailer, I think Ted Lasso would absolutely say, you know, reminds me of Lil Wayne in 6 foot, 7 foot. Real G's move in silence like lasagna. Cracks me the heck up. What do you think of?
Well, I'm trying to process what you just said. I love that. Now, I think This episode, as we're going through the rewatch, you know, the first episode, I was intrigued. The second episode, I liked. This is the episode that got me hooked. I absolutely love this episode. And I kind of revisit it, the one thing that I really hang on to is really the end of the episode, where we're hearing what Trent is writing about Ted and AFC Richmond from the article. And it starts with Higgins starting to communicate it, and then it ends with Trent speaking.
In a business that celebrates ego, Ted reigns his in.
His coaching style is subtle. It never hits you over the head.
And I think that's a fantastic observation of Ted and how he's getting things done. And it seems like a perfect talking point. You know, we like to talk about leadership all the time for us to discuss specifically around subtle leadership. So I guess my question to you is, when I say the phrase subtle leadership, is there anything that comes to mind?
Well, I'm kind of laughing because you brought up it's not hitting somebody over the head, right? And I was a high school math teacher and I started when I was 21. So for sure, you know, if you're teaching 16, 17, 18 year olds when you're 21, you kind of have to hit them over the head with some leadership because you can't be their friends. So my first day, I walked in, slammed the door and said, the bell rang. What are you doing talking? Those were the first words anybody heard. But my last year of teaching, you know, I learned to be a little more subtle. And what I found was that if I could get the students to want to learn pre-calculus, that everybody was a lot happier to be there, right? I didn't have to force it down their throat. One day in particular comes to mind. I had a complicated system for solving polynomials, you know, solving equations, and there's a shortcut to it. And I could have just gone in and said, I'm going to give you a shortcut for this. But instead, I sort of appealed to the average high school mentality. And I asked them if they wanted to race me. And nice. I said, you all can use a calculator and I'll do it manually. So I can remember like three of the kids in class stood up, like they were game face. They were in the ready position. I said, I'm good. You know, and I normally wasn't super arrogant in class, but I was really playing it up that day. And so I said, you all better be ready. You know, get your calculators turned on, make sure those batteries are warmed up. You know, because I knew I had a shortcut. I let them pick the equation. It was super complicated, like one of those gross ones. And yeah. I let them decide what number to plug in. And I can remember going down the chalkboard and I said, it's 286, right? And I knew for a fact they'd pushed like 6 or 7 buttons. They're like, what? You know, so I made them repeat this a few times. And I was like, how many of you wish you knew how to do that? And they were like, yeah, yeah. And I said, I pointed to my objective sign in the class. And I said, well, today's objective is to learn how to do that. And they literally said, Miss Stockman, I hate it when you make me want to learn this stuff. So I kind of felt like maybe that Roy Keeley, you know, like, his tricks and gifts aren't going to work. But they were just as angry. They're like, darn it, you've tricked me into wanting to learn math. So that was, I got a little more subtle than just slamming doors. Maybe I was a bit of a Roy Kent in my early teaching days. How about you?
Yeah. I think that's brilliant. And that's, I think that's very much more effective than where my head's at when I think of subtle leadership. And I guess I come at it from the counter perspective. And really, the best way I think I can answer what subtle leadership is about is I think of every time that I blindly issued a mandate, even if I was completely right to do it, I feel like I've always ended up regretting it. You know, and I think from being a parent, it's the most evident, right? Don't do X, Y, Z. You know, why, Dad? Because I said so. Yeah. Does that ever work out for you? No, it doesn't. So on a daily basis, I seem to get reminded that just issuing a mandate to a child rarely ever works. But the one that comes to mind in a business setting was, I don't know if you remember when we worked together a while ago we've worked together for quite a bit, but at one point we worked for an ed tech company that had got acquired and we ended up merging two companies together. And I was put in a position that oversaw our professional services teams, and they were merged together. And one of the first things that I was told was that this team that was merging into my current team had some stability issues with their platform. And one of the reasons it was well known was that the professional services team had direct access to a database and would go in, it would update things all the time. And it wasn't the most stable of outcomes. You know, they were from time to time messing things up. So I was given the full support of the executive team to change and fix that. And I already had a solution that worked for that. We had done it with the team that I was currently working under, and I knew it was the right thing to do. I mean, you don't want to just open up the Wild West to have people start updating data in a non-change control environment. But that didn't. But the end result was I basically mandated a solution that I knew would work, and I knew it was the right thing to do. But I will say to this day, it's one of the biggest regrets I have in business, because for 6 months after that, I had inherited a team that now worked underneath me that thought that I didn't listen to them, that didn't think I appreciated their advice, right? And threw roadblocks up against me for an entire 6 months until I finally figured out, hey, really, mandating this solution was really not a good idea, considering the fact that I did not let them in on how to get past this issue that we had.
Why.
So,
right. Sign yeah. Phoenix, if they believe in your why, they'll buy your what. That would have been a lot easier pill to swallow if you let them in early.
Yep. And by not letting them in early or at all, for that matter, it really impeded progress down the line. So not only did I make that decision that was ultimately the right decision, but it blocked me right away. They had immediate pushback, but it affected me for months thereafter because I did not have the trust or the buy-in.
And so that's exactly the opposite of what Ted is doing. Although he doesn't give the why, but he's not coming in with mandates. He's got this much more subtle approach, like you said.
Yeah, absolutely. So I believe we think we're students of subtle leadership, but maybe we can take a shot at talking about some of the high level points on what we believe some of the key aspects of subtle leadership are.
Okay, Dr. Stockman,
you're up. Let's talk about subtle leadership and what you believe the primary elements of subtle leadership are and that we should be discussing.
So I think subtle leadership comes from the leader's ability or desire to get their team, employees, family to be intrinsically motivated to want to play the game, right? Whatever, follow the why, whatever that is. But I think in this episode specifically, there were five or six specific strategies that Ted used that I would love to chat about. So first, there's the whole notion of storytelling being more powerful than telling, right? Second, and Trent mentioned this specifically in his letter, how to turn followers into leaders. Third, giving voice to others that might have been unheard before. So how do you empower others? Great way to find hidden talent. Respect is actually a bit of subtle leadership, especially the way that Ted lets that play out. Making connections within your network and for other people is actually a key to subtle leadership. And you mentioned this, and it's really the biggie, taking ego out of it. So I'd love to chat through each of those because Ted's given great examples that we can show, but also talk about what that looks like out in the wild if you're not in a television show where everything works the way you want it to.
All right, let's dive in. So I believe the first item on your list was storytelling, right? And I think we could all acknowledge that the whole notion of storytelling outweighs the notion of telling, just telling somebody what to do. Yeah. But to tie it into the show, I think what we loved about it was when the players all came back to the locker room after the practice, they all ended up having some gifts at the top of their lockers.
One last thing, there's some gifts up in y'all's lockers, your little cubbies up there, so hope you enjoy them.
Met with some curiosity, some, yeah, some WTF. But let's talk about the books that some of our favorite players had. Sam. And I guess we'll, Sam had Ender's Game, correct? Great book. And I think in the comments, we might put, without a spoiler, since we're doing a rewatch, we might put the summary of Ender's Game and how that might apply to Sam.
Perfect.
as the episode goes. And what was the book that Jamie got?
The Beautiful and the Damned.
The Beautiful and the Damned. Yeah, from the title, it certainly seems like we know where that one's going. But Roy got A Wrinkle in Time. Right. And, you know, the Trent gives us the summary of A Wrinkle in Time.
I mean, what even is A Wrinkle in Time?
It's a lovely novel. It's the story of a young girl's struggle with the burden of leadership. She journeys through space.
And it seems awfully appropriate, given this episode and what Ted's trying to get out of Roy in terms of becoming a leader on the team. But more specifically, we have the whole notion of Nate getting bullied in the show. And what one of the things that we quickly come to realize is that Roy is observing this, and if he pretty much feels like something needs to be done about it.
Hey.
Yeah, I just thought you should know that your boy Nathan's been harassed every single day by Jamie and his little side pricks.
Right.
So you know already.
Yep.
So you'll take care of it.
No.
And what happens from there?
Oh, well, Ted tells him a story.
Roy, I learned two pretty big lessons on the rough and tumble playgrounds of Brookridge Elementary School. One, if little Ronnie Fouch offers you a candy bar, you immediately say no and you get the hell out of there. Number two, the teacher tells a bully not to pick on someone, it's just going to make it worse.
Yeah. And Roy's like, great. You're not going to do anything about it, right? And which is a bit weird because we talked about feedback last week. And one of the things that we said was you can collect feedback and you don't necessarily have to implement it, but you should take action on it, yeah. Right? But I think what's genius about this show is Ted is actually taking action on it. It's just not in an obvious way. It's in a very subtle way.
Know that the book he's holding in his hand is the action that Ted is taking to make a change. And as Roy walks out of the office, you know, Coach Beard, why are you winding him up, Coach? Right? Because he's the domino that needs to fall.
He is the domino, which is a great segue into the second bullet that you raised, which is followers into leaders, right? And this kind of goes back to my story at the outset when I was talking about mandating a change control process in with a new team. And one of the big sticking points that I didn't get into was the primary offender of updating production data was probably one of the most skilled consultants that I ended up ever working with. He was very strong, very savvy. And as such, he was recognized as a leader with the other team members that are out there. And the fact that I did not get him on board and I didn't listen to his perspective really did me no good in terms of getting the rest of the team on board and and with the same mindset. But I think as you said earlier, you know, when Ted said,
he's the one, Coach, we're going to make an impact here. First domino needs to fall right inside that man's heart.
That's exactly what he's doing, isn't it? He's trying to get a leader in the locker room to adopt his culture, his process, and realizing that once he can get Roy to start leading the lasso way, that his job becomes so much easier. Don't you think?
It reminds me, we'll have to put this in. The links are going to be full below. Comments down below, like grab them. Because if you haven't seen this, it is the funniest darn, I don't know, 7 minutes of your life as they talk about the notion of a first follower. So there's a guy dancing crazy on the hill. And if it had just been him dancing crazy, it would have been one thing. But instead, another guy comes and joins him. And the whole video is part of a TED Talk that talks about the importance of the first follower because it justifies and gives relevance to the leader. So the first follower is a leader in their own regard. So what happens after the first person follows is other people that were thinking, hey, I want to go dance down the hill, knew it was okay. And so then next thing you know, you've got a swarm of people dancing down the hill. And that's exactly what Ted's setting him up for. I love that.
Yeah. And I think the brilliance of it is Ted did not mandate to Roy that he needs to be the first follower. Nope. Right? I mean, he was subtle with it. He's influencing him. And in turn, Roy goes and he eventually speaks to Jamie about it. But he recognizes that Ted realizes that Roy is a leader in the locker room. And he recognizes that same point with Jamie saying,
do you even understand the influence you have on this team?
I'm the shit.
No, you're a bell end. But because your right foot was kissed by God, the boys look up to you. It's made me question my own faith.
No. Yeah, but he doesn't take Ted's, you know, sideways approach. He tells him flat out, like, knock it off. Stop telling the guys to bully Nate.
And did that work? That's a great. It didn't work.
Right.
Absolutely.
I think that's part of the brilliance of the show is they always show you the example and the counterexample at the same time. So in case you didn't pick it up, knock, knock, knock with the subtlety, we're going to hit you over the head with the two.
I love it. All right. If I am keeping track of your list, Dr. Stockman, the next item to be discussed was the whole notion of giving a voice to empower others to find hidden talent. Is that right?
That is on point.
Yeah. And on point again is Ted Lasso in this episode because they demonstrate exactly that with our favorite kit man, Nate the Great.
So I'm officially on the prowl for any new ideas. You hear?
Oh.
You got something, Nate?
No. No. God, no. Never mind. I'm sorry.
Come on now. You're one of us. Let's go. Fire away. What do you got?
So, again, part of the brilliance of the show is that Ted is open to any and all suggestions. And exactly as you listed, he's looking to find hidden talent. And I think he knows that Nate knows a lot about soccer.
Yeah.
And I question whether it was intentional or not that he actually made that statement when Nate was in the room. Yeah. But it brings up one of the real good scenes of this episode where Nate is forced to be a little bit confident in his opinion.
Really bad. You know what's embarrassing even?
Sorry, Nate. I have a real tricky time hearing folks that don't believe in themselves. So I'm going to ask you real quick again. Do you think this idea will work?
Yeah, I do.
Whoa! Why are you screaming at us, Nate?
On how to better improve the offense. And fast forward to a couple scenes later, they absolutely execute the scheme exactly as Nate drew it up with Jamie acting as a decoy, which doesn't go over very well in Jamie's head. But they have a new strategy, a new offense that seems to be something that might work. But the bottom line here is, you know, as a leader, what Ted did is he's empowering all of those around him, including the low-level kit man and Nate, just to try to find out if he has a hidden talent buried within the weeds of the organization, which is important. So I'm curious, do you have any examples in real life, Barney, where you have seen somebody seek out hidden talent and have looked to empower others with that?
So it's interesting. Since our last podcast, I've read two books that, oddly enough, were both about scaling teams. And they talked about the kind of over the head with the hammer leadership that is micromanagement, as opposed to the whole bit of empowering others to lead. And I actually had a CSM, a customer success manager, who worked for me, who would, in their one-on-ones, would regularly ask me, okay, this is the situation, what should I do? And I realized that basically he was just a conduit for whatever, you know, I was just answering all the questions for him, but he had good ideas, but he didn't have the confidence to implement them. And so I would no longer answer him what he should do. And I would ask, well, what are you thinking needs to happen? And did this for a couple of scenarios. And I would then, and I agreed with him every time, great, implement that. And then let me know how that goes. And then after a couple of times of this, I actually said, have you recognized the fact that you always come with the right idea? And he's like, huh. And I said, so you just need to have the confidence that I have in you. So next time I want you to go ahead and implement whatever it is. And even if it's wrong, I will have your back. If somebody chews you out, I'll take it and take the blame, right? Because that was what the anxiety was. And yeah. I said, but you absolutely know what you're doing. Have the confidence. And he used some expressions I wouldn't have used to say how he needed to just take accountability for it himself. But he really grew in learning to own his accounts instead of me feeling like he was just a translator between me and the school district. So I think it's very powerful.
You had your own little Nate there. That's perfect. Okay. Next on the list was respect. And when Trent was reading his article, he talked about the fact that Ted is slowly winning him over. And he specifically mentioned respect. And I think it was the dinner when he was at Ollie's restaurant that really, you know, was the tipping point for Trent here. And if you'll recall, he was eating that food that was, in essence, causing a fire in his stomach, but he kept on eating it because he wanted to show respect to Ollie and his father-in-law to let him know that he loved the food so much. But when we start talking about respect from a subtle standpoint, I think Trent proves the point exactly, right? Which is, you know, Trent is slowly becoming more and more a fan of Ted in this whole process. And I'm not sure he understands and is connecting the dots exactly why, which is the exact point of subtle leadership.
Yeah, that is right? Subtle leadership, right? Ted is influencing what Trent is writing by showing respect to Ollie. And when they introduces each other, you've met a really cool person, right? And yep. And he says goodnight to Trent. Like, I really enjoyed my day. And Trent says, you mean that, don't you? Like, are you crazy? I'm supposed to be your enemy. So that is subtle.
And I think what's brilliant about it is Ted knows that Yeah, he's responsible for a team, but one of his primary stakeholders as the manager and leader of AFC Richmond is the community and the fan base, right? And that is something that he is, again, in a subtle way, but he is addressing. He's not ignoring it, which is pretty darn cool. You mentioned the introductions.
Hey, Ollie, this is my friend Trent. Trent, this is my buddy Ollie.
Please meet.
Congrats. You both just met a cool person.
And networking was number 5 on your list. Yeah. Is there anything else more that you wanted to talk about networking? Any other examples in the episode?
Well, the other piece that comes to mind in networking is how he used Rebecca's network to get the picture removed from the paper, right? So he doesn't have a network in London, but Rebecca has a leadership position, a position of power where she is very connected. And when Keeley brought the picture along, he wasn't shy about using that. So not everyone thinks of the way that they can influence others to make things happen as leadership, but I am a firm believer in the power of connections. I could quote Jim Collins and Malcolm Gladwell all day on their books and the power of connection.
And you mentioned that he doesn't necessarily have much of a network in England or in Richmond specifically. And while that's true, I think one other thing to note is that he is laying the foundation and paving the way to building a network. It's obvious he was criticized out of the gate in his press conference. Anywhere he walked within the streets of Richmond or the pub. But to his credit, he's absolutely working to develop those relationships, which may come in handy down the line. All right, point number 6 that was raised was all about the notion of a couple of competing notions, ego and humility. And I think, Trent, again.
Please do me the favor of remembering that these aren't my words, it's Trent Crim. In a business that celebrates ego, Ted reigns his in.
And when we start talking about the opposite of subtle leadership, right? When we start talking about command and control type leadership or autocratic type leadership, I think it's very much associated with a lot of times somebody who is known to have quite a bit of ego. And I think in Ted's case, he clearly does not. It's not something that's, he does not lead with ego. So what say you about your last point?
You see it in counterexamples, like you said, with ego, with mandates, right, and directives, as opposed to the need to help someone get intrinsically motivated to do that action. A couple examples in the real world. Nick, your deadline is on Friday, right? That's mandate, no choice. You might want to push back versus a question of, okay, we're working on this project. Nick, what do we need to do to ensure that this project will be done by Friday? Is there anything you need to support that? Right. That is much more putting you in control, in charge of it. You know, to say to a salesperson, all right, the goal is we're going to increase sales by 10% versus, okay, what are some strategies that we could use to achieve 10% increase in sales? It's a subtle difference, but it really does change who has the power to enter the conversation. You know, as a parent, fill out that application for college tonight versus, is there anything that you're going to need help with? Are there any blockers in the way to keep you from getting the college application filled out tonight? Right. You've already made it's very clear the deadline for that, but it puts them in charge of it. I think humility is subtle. Jim Collins in Good to Great talked a lot about the surprising thing that they found is that level 5 leaders, the top leaders, were humble. And it was the humility that really was a differentiator. And because I knew we were talking about subtle leadership, I read the book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F. And Manson's Rule, so that's the author, made this statement. The more something threatens your identity, the more you avoid it. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. if you can keep your ego out of it, you can learn, grow, and become the best version of yourself. And I think that sentence really wrapped all that in a bow.
You know, you mentioned it at the outset, and you just mentioned it again when you spoke specifically of intrinsic motivators. I think we've both worked in a scenario, in scenarios, many scenarios, where the carrot has been hung, external motivators of some sort. You know, there's this whole notion and thought process that external motivators are thought to be more short-term biased, right? They reap short-term benefits, but aren't necessarily good for long-term applications, whereas intrinsic motivation is much more in it for the long haul. When you've studied, you have a doctorate in leadership, right? Is that something that has been covered, discussed much in your previous studies and experiences?
Daniel Pink's book Drive really talks about motivators, and money, for example, is not a true motivator. As long as people have enough money to live, it is not, it is one of those short-term carrots that you mentioned. It is more about having mastery of something, having some autonomy and a purpose. So it is that if it aligns with your why, it is motivating you because you see the purpose in it. So I think absolutely there has been a shift in leadership from transactional, authoritarian, et cetera, to the more servant and transformational leadership that is really about empowering folks to be intrinsically motivated.
All right. So those are some good points about subtle leadership. So how are we going to tie this in a bow? How would you wrap up this episode?
So right before Trent's letter gets read, we wrap it up with Roy reading A Wrinkle in Time to Phoebe and realizing he, in fact, does have to be the one. And he goes out to the pub, headbutts Colin, and tells Jamie there's not going to be any more bullying of Nate. So Ted's very subtle leadership ended in a very not so subtle way.
Yeah. And then I assume we're going to see it progressing throughout the rest of the show. And then it does make me wonder an open-ended question. So I'm curious if the listeners of this podcast will respond in comments how Ted might be able to execute on a mandate if he was working for a company that decided that people needed to return back to the office after working from home for a couple of years.
Ooh, I bet it would not be like some of the things we see in the news.
I think you're right. I'd love to hear the feedback and any comments.
Oh, wait, click the subscribe button, click the thumbs up, all the things for the algorithm, please.
Please. All right, so that's it this time. I don't know, remember exactly what the episode is next, but we'll see you then.
See you there.
All right.
Before you go, first, if you have any advice for us, please leave it in the comments. Second, we would love for you to subscribe. And third, let's wrap this up this week with John Wooden's Pyramid of Success. As always, if you want to see our full results, you can go to leaditlikelasso.com and check out the resources page. Today, we will take a look at Rebecca, Ted, and Trent Krim, along the characteristics of adaptability, honesty, and reliability. In terms of adaptability, John Wooden talks about the being able to adjust to any situation. Honesty, not just in thought, but in action as well, and reliability in terms of creative respect. So if we take a look at adaptability, we find all of them to be a 10. Rebecca's thrown a curveball when Ted and Keely walk in and ask her to have the picture removed, you know, from going out in the sun, and she does, and she adapts and decides to have Trent write an article. Mind you, we're not saying it's honorable intentions, but she adapts well. Ted goes with the flow when Trent shows up, takes him all the places out to dinner, to Phoebe's school, etc. And Trent also is adaptable to whatever Ted throws at him and really needs to reflect on what his expectations were based on what the reality is that he sees. And that takes us into honesty. So I'm going to rate them in reverse. Trent gets a 10 there because he is honest in his response in the paper. He expected to really slam Ted, and he has to give a much more humbling account of what he sees happening to AFC Richmond. Ted, we feel like he's shooting straight the whole time with a 10, and we're going to give Rebecca a 3 because she knows, we know she's up to shenanigans. In terms of reliability, we gave Rebecca a 6 for the same reason. She's not reliable. People may believe that she is, but we know that she's got ulterior motives. And Ted and Trent each get a 10 on that as well. They do their jobs well, and you can count on them for that. We'd like to point out at this point that people maybe wouldn't initially call Trent Krim out as a leader because he's not managing others. But again, we believe that leadership is all about how you lead yourself. And Trent really shows leadership characteristics in the way that he performs his job, as well as Ted. As usual, we hope you have a great day. We hope you have enjoyed the podcast. See you next week on Lens of Leadership. Lead It.